And we'll just do questions after each presentation. I think we have lots of time in this session, so feel free to ask questions after each speaker. Good morning. Yeah. As Diana mentioned in this presentation, which could be a contender for the winner of the longest title here at APHA this year, although I think Lisa is a close second, we're going to be discussing crossing programmatic borders. Specifically, we'll talk about data sharing between IIS and CDC to help us reach our public health goals. I have no relationships to disclose. IIS began primarily as tools for consolidating immunization data across providers. Diana talked a little bit about this. But in addition to the activities that occur within specific IIS, they also conduct data sharing with one another. We'll hear about that a little bit more from Jim. With other immunization programs and vaccine preventable disease programs, with other public health programs such as WIC and lead programs, and with CDC. In this presentation, I'll review just a few examples of some of the ways that data sharing from state-based IIS to CDC help us reach our goals. Before coming to CDC, I actually worked at a state surveillance system, and so I'm kind of familiar, as some of you may also be, with that bit of a sinking feeling that can come when you get a data request from CDC when you're in a state program. You've got your own priorities and responsibilities to deal with. I'm hoping that over the course of the presentation, I'll be able to convince at least some of you that the way that we use these data are really very useful in helping us achieve our common goals. The examples that I'll be presenting reflect the following IIS capacities. The first is to monitor vaccine uptake, to also assess vaccine shortages and ensure that providers are following the recommendations during those events, to develop standards for the analysis of IIS-based data, to support collaboration with other immunization and vaccine preventable disease programs, and to support pan-flu preparedness activities. The first example that I'll review involves monitoring vaccine uptake. Many of you are familiar with the ACIP recommended schedule for immunizations in children and adolescents, and these are just the 2008 schedules for children 0 to 6 and adolescents 7 to 18 years of age. In the last 5 years, 5 vaccines have been added to this schedule, either as new vaccines or as vaccines that were recommended for certain high-risk groups and are now recommended for routine use among all children or adolescents of a specified age. One of the roles that CDC plays that's facilitated by data sharing with IIS is to monitor the uptake of these vaccines. And looking at just one example using the human papillomavirus or HPV vaccine, this graph shows data from 6 of the IIS Sentinel sites. Diana talked about those a little bit earlier, with the percentage of females enrolled in those sites 11 to 18 years of age who received at least one dose of HPV vaccine by site and by quarter. The ACIP recommended routine use of the human papillomavirus vaccine in June of 2006, and these data begin with the third quarter of 2006 that starts in July and goes through the fourth quarter of 2007. So we're able to see a substantial increase in the percent of adolescent females receiving HPV vaccine from less than 1% when the vaccine was first recommended to more than 20% in Oregon as of the fourth quarter of 2007. CDC is continuing to monitor the uptake of HPV vaccine, and right now we are receiving data for the third quarter of 2008, so we have the ability to look at this in a very timely manner. In addition to general uptake, we're able to investigate a little bit further and make sure that vaccine recipients are receiving the vaccine as recommended. These are the same 6 Sentinel sites that were in the last slide and show data from the fourth quarter of 2007 only, looking at the age distribution of vaccine recipients. Now, the HPV vaccine is recommended for routine use among 11 to 12-year-olds, and so we show the vaccine uptake in 11 to 12-year-olds coverage in blue. In 13 to 15-year-olds, coverage is shown for 13 to 15-year-olds in purple, and in kind of a green is 16 to 18-year-olds. So we can see that the vaccine is being used by older age groups more than the 11 to 12-year-olds, which is the group for which routine vaccination is recommended in most of these sites. Now, that's not necessarily all that surprising because the older age groups wouldn't have had the opportunity for vaccination at 11 to 12 years of age, but we'll continue to monitor these data over time to make sure that we see an increase in vaccine coverage among the 11 to 12-year-olds and a corresponding decrease among 13 to 18-year-olds. Next, I'd like to talk about one example of assessing a vaccine shortage that was facilitated by the data sharing between IIS and CDC. And these vaccine shortages, of course, do happen from time to time, and the recommendations that are made to providers can be sometimes confusing to make sure that you're following what the ACIP has recommended. Again, this is just one example looking at meningococcal conjugate vaccine, or MCV4 vaccine doses, that were administered from January 2005 through March of 2007. In February of 2005, you can see there on the left side of the graph, ACIP recommended routine use of MCV4. And you can see an increase in doses administered with a seasonal peak associated with school entry in the summer months. In the mid-2006, there was a shortage of HPV vaccine, and ACIP recommended deferral of doses among 11 to 12-year-olds with continued vaccination among adolescents entering high school and college. We were able to gather information from IIS to monitor the uptake of vaccine over this time. You can see that during the course of the shortage, vaccine coverage for 11 to 12-year-olds either diminished or remained stable, and the older age groups, particularly the 16 to 18-year-olds, increased in vaccine coverage. This is consistent with the ACIP's recommendation. And following the end of that shortage, we can see a continued increase in vaccine coverage among all three age groups, and CDC continues to monitor the uptake of MCV4 vaccine to ensure that it continues to increase. Accompanying this new capacity to monitor vaccine uptake and to assess vaccine shortages using IIS data is the need for data analysis standards and data process standards. I'm not going to say too much about data process standards in this particular presentation. Those would be things like child level and vaccine level deduplication procedures, except to note that that initiative is coordinated by CDC and the American Immunization Registry Association Modeling of Immunization Operations Work Group. It's kind of a mouthful. Data analysis standards have generally been lacking in the IIS community, and there are several IIS and other immunization partners working with CDC to help us develop those standards to support the comparability of data across sites. Diana mentioned that there are several sources of data for IIS, those being electronic birth certificate data, billing data, and clinical data. Because of this, IIS can be considered population-based systems. As such, it's common to use all children enrolled in the IIS as a denominator for assessing vaccine coverage. Proponents for this suggest that while this captures all children in the population, we know it's common for children to also move around when they're young. And so although providers aren't always diligent about inputting new address information into the IIS, they may or may not know it. And Jim will also note a little bit about some of the challenges of data sharing across state borders due to privacy issues. Using all children enrolled may provide a conservative estimate because it may overestimate the number of children who actually reside in that population. Another option for a denominator for IIS-based coverage is using all children enrolled in the IIS with two or more immunizations recorded in the system. This option, again, would capture all children theoretically residing in the region. However, it would not capture unimmunized children who reside there. The thinking is that children with zero or one immunizations only recorded in the system are likely to have moved away after birth. and yet other IIS prefer to use census-based data as a denominator. And we all know that census data are generally population standard, but there are a lot of limitations to census data, not the least of which for us is that data are limited to certain age groups, and those don't always correspond to the age groups that we need for vaccine-level analysis. Looking at just one example of this, we received data from 7 IIS to look at hepatitis A vaccine coverage among 12 to 23-month-olds in 2007 using 3 different denominators. The first is, again, all children enrolled, that's shown in blue. 2 or more immunizations recorded in the system, the second example I talked about is shown in purple, and census-based denominator estimates are shown in green. Now, in some of the sites, there wasn't a big impact depending on which denominator we used. For example, in Michigan, the vaccine coverage for hepatitis A went up 3.5 percentage points when we used census-based denominators compared to when we used all children enrolled. However, in other states, the difference was more substantial. In North Dakota, the difference was 18.1 percentage points. As children age, this challenge is amplified. Again, this is coverage for tetanus diphtheria or tetanus diphtheria and acellular pertussis vaccine among 11 to 18-year-olds with at least one dose. And we use 3 different denominators again. This time, all enrolled adolescents is in blue, using census-based denominators again in green, and using data from the National Center for Education Statistics, those are school-based data, is shown in purple. And for some of the sites, it didn't, again, make a huge impact, but for other sites, such as New York City, the difference in coverage for TD or Tdap was 36.3 percentage points higher when we used NCES-based data. So allowing CDC to kind of look at these data allows us to consider what denominators may be most appropriate in different circumstances. There may not be one right answer for everybody. But these are some of the data standards that we'll begin to look at over time. The next example that I'd like to talk about is the collaboration with other immunization and vaccine preventable disease programs. Although IIS and these programs are generally both housed within a state health department, we know that the right hand and the left hand don't always talk to each other, and so these programs may not be aware of the usefulness of the IIS data for helping them achieve their own goals. And so one of the things that CDC does is conduct studies to help demonstrate this utility and provide some guidance for ways that these programs can work together to help reach their common goals. One example of this is a study that's being planned for 2009. In this study, CDC will be collecting data to evaluate these three, conduct a study to evaluate three common goals. One is to evaluate the use of IIS by state surveillance staff to collect immunization histories and demographic data during pertussis outbreak and routine epidemiologic investigations. The amount of time and resources that state surveillance staff use to go out and investigate cases, determine if cases have been vaccinated previously, to look up demographic data, address, and telephone information is substantial, not just for cases, but for contacts of cases as well. For example, in 2006, there were over 9,000 cases of pertussis among adolescents and children reported to CDC, and each one of those cases needs to be investigated. The second objective is to assess the completeness and accuracy of immunization histories collected through traditional disease investigation methods, such as medical record reviews, interviews with patients and families, and school-based reviews, compared to data that is in the IIS. Depending upon the maturity of the system, the IIS may be an excellent resource for identifying vaccine histories and demographic data, or it may not. And CDC will be able to look at IISs of different maturity levels to determine when and how those data are most useful to state surveillance units. And lastly, evaluating the use of IIS for pertussis vaccine history investigations for the contacts of cases, yet another labor-intensive process. If you have 9,000 cases of pertussis alone, you have many more contacts to investigate. And IAS may or may not be useful tools for looking up demographic data and immunization histories for those contact cases. And lastly, I'd like to talk just a little bit about pandemic influenza preparedness. The National Strategy for Pan-Flu Implementation Plan calls for the monitoring of pre-pandemic and pandemic influenza vaccine. There are 50 project areas, in addition to four cities, and 8 territories that are required to submit data on a weekly basis to CDC in the event of a pandemic. And these projects are expected to track pan-flu influenza doses that are administered at the individual level and then submit aggregate data to CDC. There are currently exercises ongoing, actually, as we speak, to test the capacity to do these transfers. And there are 3 options for ways that program areas can transfer data to CDC. The first is through an electronic data transfer from an IIS to CDC. And as of September 2008, approximately 23 programs selected this option. The second option is a manual data collection and then reporting of the aggregate data using CDC's Countermeasure and Response Administration web application, and about 35 project areas selected this option. Now, manual data collection is kind of a vague term, and it can mean many different things. For some of the project areas that have selected this option, we know that manual data collection for them means looking up their data in their IIS. And they simply use the CRA web-based application to submit the aggregate data to CDC. And the third option is to use the CRA application to collect both individual data and to submit that aggregate data to CDC. And approximately 4 sites selected that option. Allowing CDC to take a look at this helps us notice if there are gaps in capacity for states to transfer data, either those states that have selected option 1 or states that haven't selected option 1, and then to target resources for building that capacity. It's hoped that as time goes by, more and more sites will be able to electronically transfer data, both within the event of a pandemic and outside of that, as needed. In summary, there are many ways that CDC uses data from the IIS. I know it's not always easy to respond to all of the calls for all of these things that we're working on, but with our shared goals, CDC is really quite useful for us to receive these data and really helps us build additional capacity to serve the sites better. Thank you. And questions in between? And I'm happy to take any questions. Jim.
Quick comment. On Wednesday, I'm going to be presenting data from our Sentinel site, APV, with some updated graphs of the APV bar graphs. And we did take a look at the what I call the no-shot or all-inclusive denominator as opposed to the greater than 2 denominator. Looks like for HPV, there's about a 5% gap with the rates going down when you include all kids in the registry of those age groups.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the denominator issue is a challenge for us, and each site has its unique circumstances. For example, the NCS-based data, the school-based data in New York is a bit of a challenge because they have such a higher proportion of private schools that are difficult. It's difficult to estimate the number of children in private schools based on the data that we have available, and that may account for that huge difference we see in adolescent vaccination based on the NCES denominator compared to census or all children enrolled in the IAS. Thank you.
Regarding the denominator issue, which is a thorny one,
yep.
Right now, a lot of the IISs have started out as childhood and
Mm-hmm.
And as they expand their reach, of course, they don't have to separate children in the kind of numbers.
Yeah.
The ones that had, like, in all ages, so New York City is a certain case in point.
Yeah.
That. So, and the other problem also is the focus on pediatric services for the early registries, not necessarily the source of care for some of the older children. But the challenge for the registries to expand, exponentially, so it probably could incrementally.
Yeah. And having the birth certificate data, as time goes by, those younger children will age into the adolescent age group, and then some of those kids will get put into the system based on provider experiences and receiving vaccines. But for the relatively newer systems who haven't been around long enough for the birth certificate data to age in, you can really underestimate the number of adolescents in your population. Question here.
Mm-hmm. Issue that seems a reasonable assumption that our kids in the IS who have only gotten two shots probably moved away.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you have enough information in the IS data that you receive from the 30 some states where you don't get aggregate, you get actual case level data, but it's at least partially. But you must have in those 30-some states a bunch of states that are adjacent to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And most people who move to, well, frankly, an adjacent state.
Yeah.
So can you look at the existing data you've got to assess how good that assumption is that people move?
That's really challenging. Looking at, looking at identifiers is something that's a challenge for CDC, but within states, Jim will talk a little bit about the data sharing between Oregon and Washington, because some of the privacy laws and regulations prohibit that sharing. It's, you really may know that kid is living in the state right next to you, but you may not be able to do anything about that within your system in terms of confirming that that's really true with another IIS. And so a lot of the states are working very hard at establishing these data transfers. New York City and New Jersey have presented a couple of times on data sharing that's ongoing there. And I think the last I heard, and this may not be the current situation, is that New Jersey is able to receive information from New York City, but the opposite is not the case. So New York City is not able to update their data with the kids from New Jersey. And so, again, because of the privacy issues. So we have not found a good way to tackle that issue quite yet. Hopefully more data sharing across sites will become possible soon. Right. The current exercise that's ongoing and the exercise that actually happened in 2007 uses seasonal influenza vaccine. That slide, the pre-pandemic vaccine, is actually referring to vaccine that's already been created to respond to a pandemic that we think might be the best match. So as soon as something happens, because there's the delay in creating the vaccine. So the pre-pandemic actually refers to that vaccine that is pandemic-specific that we've already developed, but the exercise uses seasonal influenza vaccine as the closest proxy that we have to assess the capacity to do these things that we need done. Let's see, Diana, do you know how many are lifespan systems? About half of IIS are lifespan, and of course of varying capacities. Some are doing a great job and some are still gearing up. Yes. I'm sorry, Gary.
I'm from Minnesota, and we have a growing comparison. We have now experienced a bit of a challenge as more and more of our health systems are moving towards the
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge that we've had is we've got to the point where we're working with our local IGA and had phenomenal correlation in our own data to try to stress this to the doctors. And now over the last year and a half, that's really starting to deteriorate.
It started to deteriorate.
Mm.
I'd actually invite Jim and Lisa to talk about that from their state experience. They can probably talk more about the nitty-gritty of what goes on with EMRs and how it affects their data, since they're really regularly looking at their systems.
I'm a little confused. What is it that seems to be in Oregon? We have a system called Alert. That's our IIS, and we actually feed data directly from large plans that have EMR systems, and so whatever they send us from their system, we get. So I'm not sure what, is it the quality of data that you're talking about?
Most of our EMR systems, there isn't a feed directly. Our system is called the
challenge. I think we've started out with we will take anything that you give us. The only thing that we don't take are data from the school record because it's not specific enough, and that's debatable. But we've worked to accommodate and be flexible with our system. But our system was built kind of as a homegrown thing. I'm going to talk a little bit about differences in IIS. And we've come into some challenges, and now we're purchasing a large standard system from another vendor. And there's limitations to that. Each system has its limitations. But we try to accommodate, our philosophy was to accommodate anything. Now, yes, of course, we don't have a lot of staff to. We've got data analysts, we've got people that on the IT side, or maybe one or two people, or three people deep that actually handle these databases. So they may not be coming in as timely. I've been out to the clinics and heard the other side. Providers say, providers that just send us paper stuff say, gee, we sent this information to you. And then we go to look for it and it's not there. I don't have a sense of, is it not there because there was a processing delay or whatever, but I was just at a tribal clinic, and that was one of their frustrations. It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
And as more sites are moving, or as more providers are starting to use EMRs, the interface between the IIS and the EMR is no easy matter. It requires a lot of technical initiation and upkeep to keep it working properly. And so building that technical capacity within the IIS to reach out to those providers and facilitate that exchange is really important, but it's resource intensive. Okay. And Gary has been waiting.
Just a couple of points. One is the most recent point. starting next year, the Certification Commission for Health Information Technology will start to certify ambulatory EMRs as being interoperable with immunization registries using HL7. So this will help over time. It's not going to be